The following message comes to you from the pulpit of Zion Primitive Baptist Church in Zion, Alabama. For more information, please visit us online at zionpbc.com.
I want to welcome you today to the Gospel of Grace podcast. This podcast is an outreach of Zion Primitive Baptist Church near Gordo, Alabama. I'm Chris McCool, and I serve as pastor of Zion Primitive Baptist Church. We are a congregation where families worship together through the simple practice of preaching, praying, and singing. We would love to have you worship with us in person sometime. The church address is 9487 County Road 49, Gordo, Alabama. We meet every Sunday morning at 10:30 and every Sunday evening at 5 p.m. and the first and third Wednesdays at 6:30 p.m. Please stay tuned for a message of God's sovereign grace.
I want to continue tonight with the 16th chapter of Revelation. Now, this chapter is a detailed yet symbolic description of the judgment of God at the second coming of Christ. So let me just repeat that because that's what it's about. It's a detailed symbolic description of the judgment of God at the second coming of Christ. Now tonight we're going to be looking at the seventh of seven angels, each of which has a vial or a bowl that when poured out results in various judgments of God. So that's just a picture. It's not that this is actually what's happening, but it's to give us a picture in our mind of God's judgment at the second coming of Christ. So let me read this, which is just a short description of the first six angels, each of which poured out their vial. The first vial was poured out upon the earth, and a grievous sore fell upon the men with the mark of the beast, that is, those that are not the children of God. The second vial was poured out upon the sea, and everything died in the sea. The third vial was poured out upon the rivers and fountains of waters, and those who shed the blood of saints and prophets were destroyed. The fourth angel poured out his vial upon the sun, and men were scorched with fire and blasphemed the name of God and repented not to give him glory. The fifth angel poured out his vial upon the seat of the beast, and his kingdom was then full of darkness, and they gnawed their tongues for pain and blasphemed God and repented not. The sixth angel poured out his vial upon the great river Euphrates, and the water was dried up that the way of the kings of the east might be prepared. Now, we're not going to review anything about those particular judgments, but I did want to refresh your memory on it. So let's begin tonight in Revelation chapter 16 and verse 17. It says, "And the seventh angel poured out his vial into the air. And there came a great voice out of the temple of heaven from the throne, saying, It is done. And there were voices and thunders and lightnings, and there was a great earthquake, such as was not since men were upon the earth, so mighty an earthquake and so great. And that great city was divided into three parts, and the cities of the nations fell, and great Babylon came in remembrance before God to give unto her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. And every island fled away, and the mountains were not found. And there fell upon men a great hail out of heaven, every stone about the weight of a talent. And men blasphemed God because of the plague of the hail, for the plague therefore was exceeding great. And that brings us to the end of chapter 16. So you see that this whole chapter is about the judgment of God at the second coming of Christ. Now notice what this angel does. The seventh angel poured out his vial into the air. Now that seems strange at first, because all the other angels poured out their vial on something, whether it be on the earth or whether it be the sun, but they poured out their vial on something. This one poured out his vial in the air. Now, as we read the language that follows, I believe it'll be clear that this angel pouring out his vial into the air is an emphasis upon the Lord coming in the air. And we'll see that not only here, but in some other references. In other words, what it says about the seventh angel just really makes clear the conclusion of God's judgment on the wicked. Now, first of all, the number seven in the Bible refers to completion. So we can look at this as the completion of God's judgment. And it says he poured out his vial into the air. Now, first of all, notice Revelation chapter 1, verse 7. This will illustrate what he's talking about here. Revelation chapter 1 and verse 7, in reference to Jesus, it says, "Behold, he cometh with clouds, and every eye shall see him." So here's another passage in Revelation that makes it clear that when the Lord comes back, he's coming in the air. He cometh with clouds. And then you'll notice also in Matthew chapter 24. Matthew chapter 24 and beginning with verse 29. Jesus says, "Immediately after the tribulation of those days." Now, we'll not establish this for the sake of time, but the tribulation he's referring to is not some specific short dispensation. The tribulation is the time period that God's people are in from the first coming of Christ until the second coming of Christ. You are in a tribulation now. You remember what Jesus said? He said, "In the world you shall have tribulation, but be of good cheer, I have overcome the world." But immediately, that is suddenly, immediately after the tribulation of those days, shall the sun be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from heaven, and the powers of the heaven shall be shaken, and then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven. And then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn, and they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. So here's two passages, one in Revelation, and it was Jesus speaking. Here in Matthew, Jesus is speaking, and it both makes reference to him coming in the clouds. So to me, that makes sense that this angel pours out his vial into the air, and then the verse continues and says, "And there came a great voice out of the temple of heaven from the throne saying, it is done." I don't believe that could be any plainer. And we can even give you some other verses, one of which you're probably already thinking about. But notice here, first of all, what he says. When he pours out his vial into the air, that is, judgment has already been meted out on the earth. All the physical things have been destroyed. And now the Lord's coming. The focus is on the Lord himself coming. And it says, at this time, when he poured out his vial into the air, there came a great voice out of the temple of heaven from the throne saying, it is done. Here's the end of time. Now notice in John chapter 19 and verse 30, you'll find a phrase that's almost exactly the same as this, but it's referring to a different point of time in history. In John chapter 19 and verse 30, Jesus is on the cross. When Jesus therefore received the vinegar, he said, it is finished. And he bowed his head and gave up the ghost. Now what's the difference? This is approximately 33 AD when Jesus dies on the cross and said, it is finished. And most believe that Revelation was written in the 90s AD, so this is 60 years later. And here, written 60 years later, he's speaking of a future event. So Jesus finished the work of redemption. Jesus finished what the Father sent him to do, and you know what that was, to save his people from their sins. He bowed his head and he said, it is finished. And notice what he then says. He bowed his head and gave up the ghost. He wasn't out of control when he died. He gave up the ghost. He bowed his head and he gave up the ghost. Why? Because the wrath of God had been satisfied. What Jesus came to do to satisfy God's justice had been finished. Now, here in Revelation, he's not speaking of the redemptive work of Christ. He's speaking of the end of time, the final consummation of all things. You know, Paul said it this way. He referred to that as the dispensation of the fullness of times. The final dispensation, the last one, the eternal dispensation. And that's what he's talking about here. This angel pours out his vial into the air, and immediately after that, notice what it says. It says, there came a great voice out of the temple of heaven from the throne saying, it is done. And there were voices and thunders and lightnings. And there was a great earthquake, such as was not since men were upon the earth, so mighty an earthquake and so great. This is the same terminology that Jesus used in three of the Gospels in reference to the second coming. Notice, first of all, in Mark chapter 13, now you could read this in Matthew as well, but in Mark chapter 13 and verse 24, it says, but in those days after that tribulation, the sun shall be darkened and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars of heaven shall fall and the powers that are in heaven shall be shaken, and then shall they see the Son of Man coming in the clouds with great power and glory, and then shall he send his angels and shall gather together his elect from the four winds, from the uttermost part of the earth to the uttermost part of the heaven. There he is gathering all his people together when he comes in the clouds. But notice the description here in verse 25, the stars of heaven shall fall and the powers that are in heaven shall be shaken. In Luke 21 and verse 25, this is the same thing being addressed. It's just Luke's account of it. In Luke chapter 21 and verse 25, now notice this. And there shall be signs in the sun and in the moon, and in the stars, and upon the earth, distress of nations with perplexity, the sea and the waves roaring, men's hearts failing them for fear, for looking after those things which are coming on the earth, for the powers of the heaven shall be shaken. And then shall they see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. When these things shall begin to come to pass, then look up and lift up your heads, for your redemption draweth nigh. Now Jesus redeemed you on the cross, but this is the redemption of your body. This is when he claims that which he purchased on the cross. Your redemption draweth nigh. So even though we recognize that the context of Revelation is symbolic language, we can prove by these accounts given in the Gospels that what he's describing here in Revelation is actually the physical things that are going to happen when the Lord destroys the earth. Revelation chapter 16, and notice now let me just read verse 18 again, and then we'll go on to verse 19. There were voices and thunders and lightnings. There was a great earthquake, such as was not since men were upon the earth, so mighty an earthquake and so great, and the great city was divided into three parts. The cities of the nations fell. And great Babylon came into remembrance before God to give unto her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. Now what is Babylon to be, how is it to be thought of? Babylon represents everything about this world's systems apart from God. Whether it's the political world, the financial world, all the things that are of this world, large false religions, all the systems of this world that are not of God, everything that this earth, this world, this secular mindset, everything by which it operates, that's Babylon. And it's going to come to an end. You see, that's a distinction that can be made that separates what Babylon is referring to from just wicked men in general, or just false religions, or false prophets. You know, we'll get to chapter 17 later, but let me just read this one verse to show you this. Verse 5 of Revelation 17, and upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. So that's what he's talking about. Great Babylon came in remembrance before God. You know, when you see the wicked acts of men, and I don't want to just focus on the political world, but when you see those that are in favor of such ungodly, immoral things, notice this says in verse 19 that Babylon came in remembrance before God. Every baby that has been aborted, every wicked politician that promotes even death after birth, They're going to give account of that. God remembers that. It's going to come into remembrance before God to give unto her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. And every island fled away, and the mountains were not found. Now notice how this is mentioned in Revelation chapter 6 and verse 14. And the heaven departed as a scroll when it is rolled together, and every mountain and island were moved out of their places. Complete destruction of this physical world at the second coming of Christ. He's coming in clouds, And yes, he's coming to deliver his people, but you remember what I've said several times, that the focus of Revelation is God delivering his people through his judgment on the wicked. In most of the Bible, we think about God blessing us as we're obedient, but here he addresses it in terms of God's judgment on the persecutors of his people, and in his judgment on them, we're delivered, and one day we'll be eternally delivered because his judgment on them will be eternal. So he says here in Revelation chapter 16, and then verse 21, "And there fell upon men a great hail out of heaven, every stone about the weight of a talent." Now, you know how much a talent weighs? Some say 75 pounds, some say 100. Let's just go with 75 pounds. That's some pretty big hail, isn't it? You know, we say there's golf ball size hail and sometimes softball size hail. You know, this is more than bowling ball size hail. This is 75 pound pieces of hail. But notice what happens. "There fell upon men a great hail out of heaven, every stone about the weight of a talent, and men," again, remember when it refers to men in general in Revelation, it's speaking of those that are not the children of God. That's how it is consistently used in the book. When men is referred to in a generic sense, it says, "Men blaspheme God because of the plague of the hail." You know, one of the questions that I've talked to Tina about is, and she always reminds me whenever I talk about the way somebody else is, she says, "Buddy, they're not you." We know there are, you know, if we put ourselves in the shoes of those that are experiencing this hail, we might have a different reaction than they do. But see, wicked and evil men, the here and now is all there is to them in their mind. They have a future, but in their mind, that's all they think about. That's all they care about. That's why that people will remain in positions of authority, you know, into their 80s and some even 90 in prominent positions, because that's all they have to hold on to. You know, I know of one or two senators that even on their deathbed in the hospital, they wouldn't lay aside their position. Just had to keep holding on to that power. Well, if this world is all you know and all you care about, that's logical, isn't it? That's the way to be. These men, when this hail fell on them, they blasphemed God. They weren't humbled. They weren't made to fear God. They blasphemed God. They just hated God more. I believe it was, and I hope I get the name right. I don't, we'll have to correct it later. Richard Dawkins. Isn't he the one that was that atheistic evolutionist? Died a few years ago. Somebody asked him about, well, what about all these people like you who on their deathbed claimed that they now believed in God? They changed their mind on their deathbed. And he said, well, that's not going to happen to me. I'm going to make sure there's some witnesses there when I die so no one can make the false statement that Richard Dawkins changed his mind on his deathbed. Now, that's hard, isn't it? There's no fear of God in a statement like that. In other words, my legacy is I want people to know that I continue to be an atheist to my last breath. Well, that's what he's talking about here. These wicked men, no matter how much they're hurting, they blaspheme God. You remember with regard to the fourth and fifth angels that we read about early, both as a result of the fourth and fifth angels pouring out their vials, it says that the men blaspheme God. There's two places we've already read where it says they repented not. That's the consistent behavior of wicked men that have no fear of God, that are not born of again, that are totally under the influence of evil and Satan and their sin nature, which is the only nature they have. They blaspheme God because of the plague of the hell, for the plague thereof was exceeding great. So notice how this concludes. The Lord comes back, and the shout is made out of the temple of heaven, saying, "It is done. It's the end." And the focus here is on the judgment of the wicked. You remember 1 Corinthians 15, which is the longest chapter in the Bible. In discussing the resurrection, it does not address the wicked. Have you ever noticed that? It's 58 verses, the longest discussion of the resurrection in the Bible, and it doesn't address the resurrection of the wicked. But see, this is what he's focusing on here. When the Lord comes back, he's going to come in clouds. There's going to be noise, thunders, lightnings, earthquakes, such as was not since men were upon the earth. So mighty an earthquake and so great. And the great city divided into three parts. I didn't address that. That may just refer to the city crumbling apart, or maybe God judging one portion at a time. I don't know, but it's at least a breakdown of the systems of this world. The great city was divided in three parts, and the cities of the nations fell. So regardless of how you interpret that division of the city into three parts, it at least is teaching the breaking apart and the progressing judgment on these cities as they fall. The islands fled away, the mountains were not found, 75-pound pieces of hail fell on the wicked and they blasphemed God. But while this is going on, we're going to be having a different experience entirely. And I'll conclude with just reading a portion of Scripture that shows how different it will be for God's children. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. Whenever I speak at the graveside of a funeral, this is the one I probably refer to more than any other. Notice what Paul says in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 13. I would not have you to be ignorant, brethren, concerning them which are asleep. That's speaking of those which have died, their bodies. That you sorrow not, even as others which have no hope. For if we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so them also which sleep in Jesus will God bring with him. When you die, you go to be with the Lord. That's how the Lord can bring you with him when he returns. For this we say unto you by the word of the Lord, that we which are alive and remain unto the coming of the Lord shall not prevent, will not proceed or go before them which are asleep. For the Lord himself shall descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel, with the trump of God, and the dead in Christ shall rise first. Then we which are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. And so shall we ever be with the Lord. Sounds like two different events, doesn't it? But it happens at the same time. But the other one's not going to bother us, because we're going to be eternally delivered from all the trouble and persecution that was brought upon us by those wicked people while we lived here in this world.
Thank you for joining us today on the Gospel of Grace podcast. We hope you'll join us again tomorrow when we'll present another message of God's sovereign grace. In the meantime, if you have any questions or would like to contact us, please go to the website at zionpbc.com. where you can subscribe and get email updates every time a new sermon or any announcements are posted. Also, you can contact me directly at jchrismccool@gmail.com. That's the letter J, chrismccool@gmail.com. Again, thank you for joining us today on the Gospel of Grace podcast, and may the Lord bless you is my prayer.
We thank you for listening to today's message. For more information, please visit us online at zionpbc.com.